Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or just trying to make life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Today I talk to Tom Gofton, the owner of Afterlife Video Game Lounge, the Round Table Game Tavern, and the founder and originator of Guelph's Comic-Con, GenreCon. We've dealt with some serious issues in the last few weeks on the show, and while this is mostly a serious podcast, we do also like to kick up our heels and have some fun with old friends, which is exactly what we do this week. Nerds and geeks of the Royal City uniting is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. Guelph is a nerdy place. Have you noticed? There are two dragons now, a North and South End location, and those Magic the Gathering tournaments, they are standing room only. Speaking of twos, there are also two board game establishments, although owned by different people and offering different flavors of gaming. Still, think about that for a minute. Downtown Guelph has two places where you can go in and play a board game while having a food and drink. The perfect low-key night out for friends and family in the midst of what's typically seen as a late night party district for the university crowd. Now this is where Tom Gofton comes in. He's one of the people that read the tea leaves and saw that there's not just a market for board game cafes in Guelph, but a huge market. I've known Tom from my filmmaking days. We've worked together at Sin Studios for years, and we stayed in touch since splitting off to conquer different domains. Mine was local journalism. His was being a multi-hyphenate nerd. So Tom's kingdom includes the Roundtable, Afterlife, and Medieval Academy, and the reason I wanted to get together and talk to him today on the record, GenreCon, which takes place the weekend of February 9th through 11th at the Holiday Inn on Scottsdale. So this week on the Guelph Politicast, I admittedly hang out with an old friend, and we reminisce about some things, but in between, we talk about building a nerdy empire in Guelph and why Guelph is so nerd-friendly. We also talk somewhat seriously about the challenges of being an entrepreneur in the Royal City and the quality of summoning fearlessness and learning to be okay with failing while still being entrepreneurial. We also touch a bit on women in geek culture and how they contribute to making cons better, as well as GenreCon's own Guelph-inspired flavor over other local cons. Now, before we begin, and in the interest of full disclosure, I will admit that in the past I've done promotions for the Roundtable and GenreCon in the form of press releases. I am not involved as an organizer of GenreCon, nor do I have a business stake in the Roundtable or GenreCon, so just so you are aware, I do have a pass with these establishments. I still think it is interesting, though, to talk about the nerdy aspects of, shall we say, life in Guelph, and that was the only impetus in inviting Tom to come on the show this week. So without further ado, I caught up with Tom Gofton last week in studio. Tom Gofton, thank you so much for joining me today.
Right on. Thank you for having me.
Been a while.
Yeah. It's been a while.
I want to ask you about a great many things, but let's start with the big question. I think we can comfortably call you sort of a nerd emperor locally. You have your own little nerd empire here with
the
Round Table.
Somebody was asking me recently, like, so what do you do? And I just went,
Where do I begin?
Is it like multi-entrepreneur? Is it like just the person who creates things? And I don't know. I don't know what I am anymore, really. Am I a barista? Am I a game designer? Am I a filmmaker? I don't know what I am. I'm an eclectic dude.
But it's interesting to me that downtown we have your cafe, the Round Table. Mm-hmm. We have another board game establishment. We have another one of your businesses, Afterlife. You do the medieval training as well, the archery and all that. It seems to me that we have two dragon locations now. That's another area of nerdery. In your point of view, what makes Guelph so nerdy or nerd-friendly?
I think, so being born and raised in the city and have been given many, many, many opportunities to leave it and choosing not to, sometimes to the detriment of my own financial success, But there's something about Guelph that has a bit of a magnetism to it. And I think anyone from Guelph, or at least living in Guelph for a good portion of their lives, would be able to tell you, yeah, there's some magnetism to this city. There's some charm that it has. And it's inclusiveness. I mean, every city has a level of inclusiveness, but sometimes that inclusiveness is fake. But Guelph has multiple layers to it. It has an outwardly inclusive, sort of almost like free bohemian feel to it,
yeah,
to outsiders looking in. And then when you get to sort of the middle crust, there's this strange political hate line in our city. And then underneath the crust of the snubby side of Guelph, there's a, as I speak very frank, I'm sorry, but underneath even the rudest and crudest of our crowd, underneath are still super loving and accepting and nerdy at the core and inclusive at the core. It's kind of like, I think Guelph is kind of like the brother or the sister, the family member who you fight with sometimes. But if you ever gotten yourself in a real pickle, they'd be the first ones there to defend you. And that's what I think the city has. So by that nature, it's super, super inclusive and accepting of all different types of culture. And I mean, let's face it, geek culture.
Mm-hmm.
Nerd and geek, I mean, there's always the massive definition between the two, but geek
the classic
culture,
debate.
Absolutely. But I think the geek culture is to obsess over one or more things, right?
Sure.
And everybody in Guelph has an obsession over something, and I think that's what makes Guelph so cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I have to discourage you from being frank. That's not what this podcast is for. I'm just joking.
I was like, oh man, did I step some boundaries or something? See what I mean? There's multiple layers.
I'm too dry sometimes.
As Adam was saying that, he was holding like a shiny knife at me or something. I was like, oh my God. No, I'm kidding. He wasn't.
Good. Glad we put a pin in that right away. For people out there who aren't familiar, list everything you do. Not like in a daily basis, but you know,
oh, just
all,
like,
all the pies you have a finger in.
This all kind of started in film,
mm-hmm,
which you know, Adam, you and I were filmmaking together for years.
I was there for a while, yeah.
So we had some stories. So I still do film. I don't do it like I used to. I do a lot of corporate work for like Linamar and the City of Guelph, Relkinin, stuff like that, big clients. I do the commercial stuff because it's sort of stuck around and it's kind of what pays. But I still do a significant amount of resource brokering, I guess you'd want to say. That doesn't necessarily mean money. It means influences and connections and stuff between Seattle and Vancouver and Toronto in the film industry from just like, you know, 7-8 years of building it up. So I do a lot of film work, and I'm getting kind of back into it because all these companies, which I'll mention, are kind of merging together now. I do board game design. That is sort of the other half of my living. Professional board game designer. It's kind of weird, but you know,
they exist.
Yeah, they exist. And so I design a lot of games. And then I also opened up a board gaming tavern. So Round Table, the Round Table on Essex Street, is an eclectic community of acceptance, board gaming and fun. It looks like a medieval castle. But that's because I cheated and used my film connections to set design Castle Camelot out of stone. So that's why it looks like it belongs in the wrong century. And then I opened Afterlife Video Game Lounge on 101 Wyndham Street. And that wasn't a coincidence on 101. And actually it's the same postal code as the old studios that we used.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of cool when I'm writing it down. I'm like, wow, it's so close, right? 101, 121.
Except we're above ground now.
Yes, we're above ground. We're not dungeon hiding. So the Afterlife Video Game Lounge is sort of like an esports bar. And it's kind of ahead of its time. It's not a barcade or something, like where you have a bunch of arcade consoles and stuff like that.
Right.
It has retro like leather couches and retro seating, and you can play like Nintendo and Genesis and some of the stuff from like the old 90s and stuff like that. So it's got a very antique sort of vibe. I built and constructed the Chronos Gauntlet on Cork Street, and then I sold off my portion of it. So I'm no longer, my finger's no longer in that pie, but that pie was created by my weird, whatever you want to call it, autistic mindset. I don't know what I am, but something's not right. But it's a good thing because I wouldn't give it up for the world. But and then, so the escape rooms, which I then use that skill base to build a second set of escape rooms called Trials of Camelot. I'm super into King Arthur stuff, if you haven't figured it out yet. Trials of Camelot, which is a series of escape rooms built behind the Round Table. So I do those as well. And then beside Roundtable, there was formerly known as the Royal Garrison. For about a year, I built up the garrison. Another brainchild, archery, throwing weapons, combat, all that stuff. And then I got rid of that off to my partner, who he could run it. And then he changed the branding and stuff like that. So it's a little more of an academics place now than it was, sort of just a fun axe throwing place. But the good news is that I'm actually going to be doing more axe throwing and stuff in different cities now. So
Well, we're out of time.
I think that's it. I think we thanks for letting me just plug everything I do. But
not at all. If I can be observational about your career for a minute, stepping outside of our friendship for of the last several years, but you seem quite fearless in terms of taking on new projects and new endeavors. Yeah. Where does that come from?
I mean, coming from, you know, being in the University of Guelph right now and studying psychology and graduating from Psych Honors. I mean, this could be a whole other hour. We could get into the deep-seated where I got my drive from. But serious note for a second. So I grew up in a kind of a drug-infested house. I grew up in one of those atmospheres that weren't very conducive to children. And my mother, God bless her, she's still around, but she wasn't the smartest in terms of her decision-making skills. And that the drug addictions and the fighting and all this weird stuff that you get attuned to as a child, it sapped the childhood out of me real fast. And I ended up becoming the caretaker at 8.
Right.
And then, you know, fast forward 10 years and I'm 18 and I'm on my own. I kind of took care of people when I was young. And as you knew me in my 20s, I was a little rambunctious. So I think in my 20s, I tried to take my childhood back. And that blew my 20s by. No regrets whatsoever. It blew my 20s by, sort of the seat of the pants, you know, shooting at the hip, Wild West style. You were there for some of that.
Oh, yeah.
And crazy times, right? It's just trying some crazy
stuff. They
weren't
boring.
No, they were not boring. They were not boring. They weren't always the smoothest, but they were not boring.
That's right.
And I think in that phrase, going to university in my 20s, making the decision to go, just did absolute wonders for my confidence. And then beyond university's confidence building, and then just the entrepreneurial side and making, you know, just a couple of mistakes that we made back then, plethora of mistakes. And then finding out that after you've made a few mistakes and fallen, you can get right back up. And so when I hit my 30s, and then the kids started coming along, like my daughters, you know, looking at them and going, oh, man, this is a cycle. And so I think I was always fearless. And I think before I was kind of reckless.
Right.
And so now I think I'm fearless and I'm a lot less reckless because I'm a little more methodical. It doesn't seem like it, but I am a little more methodical in what I do. And I think a lot of it has to come from the streetwise that I had to learn as a kid. And then the fact that I maybe have a little bit of desire to not take back my 20s, but to just catch up from the 20s of me messing around and just having fun. And so the fearless is more, not an act of desperation, but it's definitely like a got to catch up. So when I hit my 40s, which is like next year, when I hit my 40s, I'm kind of where I should be.
Right.
And, you know, so I did everything out of order, but I think we're going to be caught up at some point.
Yeah, because it's the fearless, not reckless, is interesting because that's something I struggle with is, you know, how do you, you know, just say, I'm going to invest all my time, effort, and energy into doing something and erase, or not maybe erase, but put in a box on the side, the failure, the worrying about failure. And you seem to have attenuated that because it isn't just you anymore. You do have three little girls at home you have to worry about, you know, getting socks for and putting food in their lunch boxes.
That's a different ballgame when you go to the grocery store. You look at your grocery bill every week and you've tried to be like you've tried your hardest to not just be like a frivolous buyer and you're
clipped all the coupons.
Like wow, I just look at it going, how the hell?
Yeah.
I couldn't do this in a month, let alone a week back in the day.
It's interesting. But yeah, it's just you seem to have seasoned, not become you haven't given up that, I think, to your credit, the entrepreneurial spirit. Like, I will try anything.
Oh, God,
But there is method because you did you're doing the board game design, which goes into the cafe,
yep.
which then goes into the afterlife and the escape rooms. And
so I think a lot of it is recognizing a couple of factors. And I do some speeches and stuff for high schools and things. And, you know, I try to teach the kids and young youth too. Like I do at universities as well. I have one coming up at Brock actually.
Nice.
And
you can when walk and talk.
Oh yeah. Right. Well, they need some advice, right? So that's why we're bringing Reckless Tom. But I mean, I'm just kidding. Sorry, Brock, when you don't lynch me when I come into your classes. But I think so just two factors that I consider here. One is recognizing opportunity, which is the first stage, because if your gut gets that little jitter, you know, like you're watching a horror film, you're like, run, and she doesn't run, and she gets killed. And you're like, God, just before she gets killed, you're like, no, come on. There's this like weird gut fire that hits you that makes you feel like you're going to vomit, literally. And that gut feeling, when it hits you, when you're about to make a decision and that gut feeling hits you, that, in my opinion, is the indicator that you know that you're making the right choice.
Right.
That's the first thing. So don't go against your gut. Go with the pain. It's kind of weird. yes. If you're nauseous, puke, right? That's how it works. And then the other one is once you've stepped into the ring, there's a whole different level of nausea that hits you.
Right.
And that is the same feeling. I would think that it's the same feeling as being stuck in the ocean after a boat sinking and you're just floating on a piece of wood and you're thinking, okay, I got X hours until I waterlog, X hours until I dehydrate, X hours until I drown. So you're just like, you're sitting in the water and you're treading water and you're in the middle of a decision and you're like, why did I do this? And so that leads to the second point, which is perseverance. Skill sets can be taught. You can be taught to draw. You can be taught to sing. You can be taught to act. You can be taught to do whatever you want to do in life. And having natural talent makes it easier for you. It lessens the time frame to success,
right.
But there's still a time frame to success. And I think 100% of your success comes from perseverance. Simply holding on until, I would say, the bitter end. You just hold on. And you know what? At some point, right when you think it's done, it's game over and you're finished, that's the moment that it turns around. Because you've only got one direction to go at this point. You either die or you go up, right? And so even in our film industry,
right?
we hung on to the bitter end, and it collapsed, and we stopped our studio, and everyone kind of just went their own way. But in those ashes, I still hung on. I kept corporate clients, and I kept my connections into the industry just by hanging on and hoping, and just struggling. And you know, there's stuff coming up now that's we would have tried. For years to try and get what's coming up for me now. And what's coming up for me now is coming because of board games. Because you never really know what's happening, right?
So right.
Just got to hang on.
Right. It's interesting that, to phrase it another way, the end is not necessarily a bad thing.
No.
Yeah. I think that's something, you know, I've seen the end of a lot of things, but, you know, that's a difficult thing to get your mindset around. The end isn't necessarily the end of everything. It's the end of one thing. It could be start of something uniquely different, and you can't be afraid of something ending just because you're used to it.
Yeah, well, let's get emotional for a second. You and I, man, since studios, there were times we were there till 3 a.m.
Sure.
And we were drinking coffee and laughing and struggling. Sometimes we were fighting. Sometimes we were crying. Like, we struggled. We were all broke. We tried, right? We did the best we could. But there was a magic
at
like 1 o'clock in the morning. You know, Nick's off in his studio. Sach is doing his thing. Everyone's kind of sitting there. Tom Brown's complaining because he needs to get up at 6 a.m. to go to the airport.
That's right.
Like, but there was always these little moments where I'd hear you giggle out of your office.
Yeah.
And you have, I don't know if you've noticed on this podcast, but he has a very infectious laugh. But he would laugh and it would always put a smile on my face. And like we'd always, even in these hardest times, you know, Nick would come out for another a pot of coffee sponsored by the Red Brick. But you know, it's like, and we had these memories, even the sour parts, these memories will always be with us.
Yeah.
And it's in that failure of failure, meaning not negatively, in the studio not launching our careers into Hollywood and making us millions of dollars, but it's those failures and that we're still doing our things. You're still in media.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm still in some stage of media industry. You and I are still in our industries and we're successful-er now than we were back then.
Sure.
And I think a lot of it come from the hard knocks of what we did right and did wrong then.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, there were life lessons for sure. I do want to, in your listing, your list of...
I did leave one out specifically.
Did leave one out specifically.
The point of the podcast.
The point of the podcast. So it seems like a good opportunity to turn and talk a bit about GenreCon. Yeah. I one of the things I did want to ask you about was, it seems like the success of, I guess primarily San Diego Comic-Con, that has a certain infectious quality, because, mm-hmm. I mean, that used to be a con that was very much about comics and the art of comics, and now it's kind of a Hollywood trade show, so perhaps it seems appropriate that it's spread out to other places, mm-hmm. to pick up that original spirit, but... Now there's, you know, you have EuroCon, GenreCon, mm-hmm. there's Kitchener Comic Con, there's London Comic Con, and
oh, yeah.
So what makes, or how do you make GenreCon stand out in the field?
So it's, all these questions are so good that there's a lot of like subtext on the so GenreCon was an example. It was created back in Sin Studios film days.
Yep.
And its secret non-altruistic ulterior motive was to create a networking hub. Mm. For film and music and genres of that nature to get together and network. In hindsight, maybe what it could have become was, it could have become like a professional con where it was just the professionals attending to network.
Right.
But we have enough of those.
Yeah, like a trade show.
Yeah, like a trade show. But more of like a secret invite, like, you know, producer so-and-so, come on down, you know, director so-and-so, come on down. and there's groups that do that, and there's like invite only. But... there was a massive boom of Comic-Cons the last 10 years that just started coming up. And every city had one or two, sometimes three. And the Big Bang Theory of that going out is now retracting. And it's kind of crushing back in on the universe. And a lot of these conventions fell apart and are gone because, you know, what makes it stand out? A lot of them are cookie cutter and they just kind of do the thing. Mm. A lot of them have staff that, you know, they fight, they can't get along, and then it just falls apart. What made GenreCon interesting was, at the time, it was... kind of like every other con, except for that as the Big Bang crush was happening, I paused it. Mm. I had to change over the staff. Our staff was, you know, a little bit weird and toxic, but I changed over the staff. And I just kind of said, okay, we're gonna not do it anymore, but I was pausing it.
Right.
And I let this Big Bang thing kind of crush back in and wipe out a bunch of the little conventions. And then I waited for a market hole to open up. You know, there's a hole in the market suddenly. Mm. Which is like a pendulum swinging, right? One pendulum swings one way. There's a billion conventions. Everyone goes to it. Suddenly, there's too many to go to. No one has enough money. Nobody wants to go to all these conventions. Some of them have to die off.
Right?
And then when they die off, other ones will die off. And then before you know it, you've got these holes in the market again. And the pendulum swings the other way. And now the conventions come back. I think the conventions are still dying out.
Mm.
But it was the right time to bring GenreCon back for a multitude of reasons. One, Guelph has a hole. You know, there's no more ConG, there's no more GenreCon, they were all gone. So, and then a bunch of them in Kitchener stopped. So Kitchener being far enough from Guelph, but close enough to Guelph for it to make a difference, there's nothing in the Tri-City, Cambridge, Milton area. So it was like, bam, time to bring it back and time to do it right. So a new team, amazing team, you know, brought it in with fresh blood, fresh funding, boom, away we go. The other reason why it was so good is because last time GenreCon had a combat with trying to figure out how to market. Marketing is a very hard thing to do.
Yes, it is.
Well, I will tell you, owning two nerdy bars in the same city you're trying to run a Comic-Con is pretty much just the best marketing you can possibly have. Because we literally, at Roundtable, we will go through, on a slow day, easily 100 people.
Okay.
Which is insane numbers if you think about it.
Oh, yeah.
Because the capacity is like 30. So, you know, we're changing over like three times. And all these people coming in, albeit you take away the regulars and stuff like that, you are getting fresh. We're getting fresh faces every day, and
right.
It's insane. We're open, you know, 7 days a week, and it's not to mention a Saturday when we're like hundreds of people coming through. You can't, like, that's a lot of people. If you did 30 days at like 100 people, you're talking like 3,000 people coming through your establishment, and 3,000 eyes walking into a nerdy establishment. Odds are, there's a percentage, even if it's 1%. That are going to like this convention and want to go. And so far, we've seen a much higher success rate than 1%. Our ticket sales are six times the amount of pre-sale tickets than we've had any other GenreCon year combined.
Mm-hmm.
And not to mention Chris McCarpenter and Nicholas Brendan coming, Buffy stars. That
pretty big attraction.
Significantly enhanced the profile.
Yeah.
you know, and what's good about that is that Chrisma Carpenter, you know, she's like, her and Nick are friends, and Chrisma's willing to help Nick, you know, get into Canada. And Nick being here, It's his first time here in 6 years. The last time he was here was like a couple conventions after the first GenreCon where he was a guest.
Right.
And you know, so there's a giant hole in the market for them as actors, and everyone's flocking to see them and sign their cards and stuff. So the convention, that's how we're surviving. We came back at the right time. We've got local advertising that's built in.
Right.
Between the Academy and Kronos Gauntlet and all these other semi-nerdy establishments are picking up the pace and sort of popularizing it. Mm. So
it's almost like you were building towards it.
It's almost like there was a master plan. Yeah. I feel like I'm being watched. No, I feel like, that's what it was. And sometimes I don't even know what the master plan is. I said, I recognize the opportunities and go step into that door, which leads to another door, which leads to another door. And I just keep going, just until eventually I'm going to come out somewhere. So
what makes a good con? I mean, and I'm just mean genre con, because obviously you are going to be of the opinion that that's a good con. But, I've gone to a lot of cons. You've gone to a lot of cons.
Oh, yeah.
In your point of view, what makes it appealing? And maybe not just for the fans, but for casual fans.
Well, I'll tell you, I've been to conventions all over the world. London, England, all over the U.S. So some of the biggest ones, Dragon Con, New York Comic Con, San Diego Comic Con. Some of the big, big ones, you don't get a chance to see the infrastructure, the leaders, the heads of the Hydra, as I like to call it. But head Hydra. But
very fitting for the man who walked in a Captain America jacket.
I know, right? I'm glad they got rid of that storyline. But I mean, first and foremost, at a convention level, it's got to be your team.
Mm.
It has to be your team. People ask me how I do all these businesses, and I say, you know what? I am nothing without my teams, right? I'm wearing a Captain America jacket, which is kind of captainy, but to reality, I don't have a superhero power. I'm Nick Fury.
Right.
I assemble Avengers and I let them run the show. And sometimes it fails.
Mm.
Sometimes the team will corrupt itself. There's been a few occasions where my businesses have faltered because I put the wrong team members in place. They weren't true to themselves. They were greedy. They were looking for something other than the growth of a squad. And it collapsed the business from within. And that looks bad on me because it's still my business. Right. So I have to step in and either fire people or, quit or whatever. And that's fine too, because it happens. If you're doing as many businesses as I do, they're going to fail. But when the teams work, in case of Afterlife and Roundtable, when the teams work, boy, do they work, right? And they are, I don't mean work isn't like actual work. I mean talking about when they click.
Alchemy.
And when people care. So GenreCon is working now because its team is just, it got some of the best Avengers possible. And might I say, this whole thing right now with the men and women and the equality and stuff, which is really crazy and a hot topic right now, it's all run by girls. it's great because I just sit there and I do nothing. And, right. They ask me questions all the time. And I'm like, hey, you're the boss. And they're like, are we? I'm like, yes, you are. You make whatever decision you want. I'll just pay for it. And they run it so well. And they click. They click so well together. And they're so polite to all of our vendors and all of our guests. And they're accommodating to big brothers, big sisters, to charitable organizations, to whatever. Whoever wants to come. Student organizations, Inner Hall Council. They broker deals. They whatever they can. And that's huge. Because I've been to conventions, even small ones, that are not run like that, where you just see all the heads of the hierarchy fighting. And people are being greedy, and all they want is money. And if you don't put the right money on the table, it's game over.
Right?
Where other places, it's a business, but they still will accommodate you, especially if you're dropping thousands of dollars in sponsorships. They will treat you like the red carpet. And you don't need the red carpet treatment, but you do need that sort of equality. You do need that sense of that the convention wants you there, because without the convention is nothing. So without our guests and without our panelists and without our team and without our people that and our vendors, we're nothing. And our sponsors, we're nothing. Lensmail. And so, so I had to sneak that one in there. And so I think a good convention starts with the crew, and then it starts with the flavor. Then it moves to the flavor, which is like, what are you going to do? Are you going to show good programming, good educational components, like, cross playing and your transgender equality and geek culture, the history of nerds, Star Wars versus Star Trek. Like, you got to have some of the really good, hot, debatable topics, Marvel and Cinematic Universe, and you got to do panels and workshops. You got to provide interesting content.
Right.
And then after that, price is right, location is right, location, 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 and then the timing. is right. And February being, there's nothing really running anymore. People have their Christmas time and their January blues to get over the fact that there's no conventions, and everyone starts to get itchy. They're building new costumes and they want to come out and show them off. And it's like, let's hit it hard and fast, and they come to GenreCon. So,
I want to get the comments you made about women, having the women on your team. Is that unusual still, that there aren't many women involved on like the organization line? Because if you go to cons now, there are a number of women who go, and I know there's an uphill struggle there for them not to be seen as like, well, that they're just there as their boyfriends, or they're there scouting for boyfriends, that they are true blue fans, well and invested into the things they are geeky about.
Right.
But I'm wondering at the other business end of that.
So from a non-business perspective first, just to give you an idea on what I think the demographics are. Luckily for me, being able to travel every year probably to 6 or 7 different major conventions across the U.S. and Canada, I do get a chance to see the demographics. And, you know, sitting at a table with, you know, one of the stars of Buffy signing board games or something, I get to see hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people come by. And I get to see what people are buying, what people are selling. And I'll tell you that over the last 10 years, I think even, is 6, 7 years, because we went to, like, Gen Con 2011, so in fact 7 years. 7 years I've seen a significant, and I mean statistically significant from a psychology perspective, stats, significant increase of women independently being there, sometimes in groups, which is great, and more so the ones in charge, where the boyfriends are the ones running around trying to find some stuff, and they're the ones keeping everybody in a leash. And I see amazing populations of transgender, and even in some of the hotter areas of the U.S. where it's not as accepted, and massive movements from the conventions too. For example, Indianapolis, where one of the idiots in the politics seats sitting there decided to go backwards in time and try and reform some of the gay rights movements and stuff.
Also known as the current vice president of the United States.
The whole thing is ridiculous.
Thank you for injecting a little politics into this.
But here's what's important, right? Yeah. So last year, it affected me in a really funny way, but last year, when the dumb anuses sitting in the seats were stepping back a century, the convention, Gen Con,
right,
which hosts, you know, easily 120,000, if not more, almost, I would say at this point, even 250,000 passing through gamers coming to do a giant gaming convention,
right,
at the Indianapolis Convention Center, which I go to every year because I have to.
It's your industry event.
It's my industry, yes.
Yeah.
But it's also a lot of fun. And a lot more women.
That helps.
And a lot more women gamers, which is amazing. But this entire, so they had this reform about this, you know, the lack of gay movement, and the convention threatened to pull out.
Oh yeah.
And that wasn't enough for the political side to waver it. But then a biker convention, which happens right after Gen Con, also teamed up and threatened to pull out. And you're talking about, you know, between the two of them, easily over 250,000 influx in financial capital.
That's a whole
dollars.
Week in some middle of summer.
That's 2 weeks, yeah. 2 weeks or more of a set up and tear down an industry. Yeah. 2 weeks of industry in a major metropolis gone. That's a lot of money. And the population revolted, right? And so finally, I guess the bill was reversed or something happened. Go proper democracy. and then the conventions had to come back in, but the Gen Con, because all these other conventioners kind of came back in and started re-signing their documents, Gen Con got pushed by 2 weeks. So that messed up my whole schedule. Thanks a lot, politicians, right? From their perspective, I mean, the people that run the vending hall, which is like 6 halls deep, thousands of vendors, are all women. And they are hard knocks. You cannot pull anything past them. They're so good. You're like, oh, I just want to set up my table here. It's like, no. And they're she's good. Like the one who's in charge of Gen Con, she is good. She just drives around in a little cart and she's awesome. But yeah, I think it's the organization side of it is definitely a factor. And it's conventions are the smoother conventions. I would lay money down that the smoother conventions are run with a more female headstrong mindset, which is great.
Interesting.
Well, let's face it. We're men. We're a bunch of Neanderthals banging sticks on a rock.
I'm surprised I could get on the bus to come here.
Oh
Let's wind things down. I am curious about you, because we're talking about your fingers in the pies. Mm. Is there any pie you wouldn't put a finger in? Boy, that might have come out wrong. But this is what happens when I spend half an hour with you.
Yes. Toilet humor rolls down again. It's a good thing Tom Brown's not here from the Making Box, or we would have been in toilet humor 20 minutes ago.
Oh, my goodness.
I miss that guy.
That's, yeah.
Oh, I miss that guy. All right.
Speaking of, but you know, there are areas, I think, gaming, no disrespect to you, but gaming is always an area that
thing,
has never been my thing. And, you know, it's been your thing for years and years and years. But for you, is there anywhere that you cannot venture?
I don't know, because there's always something that interests me about every topic. I like to, right off the top of my head, I think of a couple things, but then I think of why. And then when I start thinking of why, I'm like, that's not good enough. I probably would do that. Like NASCAR. NASCAR. Could I do NASCAR? I don't know if I'd fit in with the crowd, but
that's a good
but
guess.
The idea behind the mechanics behind cars and putting them together is very intriguing to me.
Sure.
And and the whole business behind, you know, sponsoring NASCARs and the whole idea behind it would be something I'd still do it. Baseball. But I have a fear of baseballs because I got hit in the face a couple times as a kid and never got over it. So, I mean, like, I'm scared of baseball, so I don't think baseball culture I can get into. So I couldn't see myself opening a baseball store or anything like that. But I would sponsor a baseball team.
Sure.
And I would go and support the baseball team from behind three fences. But I would definitely sponsor a baseball team. That's, if any of you out there have baseball teams that need sponsoring, you can look me up, Roundtable. we'll put our logo on your jerseys.
I had the opposite experience. I played baseball as a kid, and I was scared of getting hit in the head
full speed
with a baseball until it happened, and then that knocked some sense into me. Or at least
something else. Explains why you can't get on the bus.
Yeah, that might be it. Going back.
There actually are some businesses I wouldn't get into. Youth and sex trafficking, drug, weapons. Any of that.
Yep.
Any of that illegal, crappy, get yourself in trouble, you know, selling TVs out of the back of a van. That's the kind of stuff that you couldn't pay me enough money to get into.
So we've drawn a firm line.
Anything
that's law-abiding, you will do.
Right.
Anything that's not law-abiding is out.
Exactly.
Maybe to wrap up, you know, you are a small business person. Mm-hmm. You're an entrepreneur. You are doing business in the city and covering the political beat like I do. The city is very interested in promoting Guelph as a great place to do business. So for you, let's do it two ways. What makes Guelph great to do business with? And what are some of your challenges that you think, because it is an election year.
Okay. So, because I have no stall or whatsoever, I will tell you this. The challenge, some of the challenges about doing business in Guelph happens to also be the double-edged sword, which happens to be one of Guelph's greatest weapons. Starting my businesses in Guelph has been hell in a handbasket. City Hall, bylaw, and all those cushiony folks make your life hell. Sometimes the logic is out the window with them, but at the time when I wanted to go Hulk at City Hall a few times on them because of their ridiculous rules and regulations, which some of them aren't even frustration levels beyond belief. But then I kind of realized in the middle of it that some of their persistent retentive kind of things is part of what keeps away those who don't have the dedication to open business to begin with. And I think that's important. And I don't know if they did that intentionally or if it was just a whole bunch of like liberal red tape that people are trying to put up.
Byproduct of the system.
Oh,
yeah.
Probably, right? But regardless, as much as frustrating as it was, I mean, I can't imagine very many entrepreneurs wanting to go through that mess. And I know that at the time there was a bit of a brawl of board game cafes in Guelph here for a bit, and there was a third and fourth party trying to jump onto the cold war of board games. and I know that one of them just couldn't get past the city issues because they were going to open one up above two brothers, whatever, Brothers Brewing.
Right.
And they had a whole lot of problems from multiple levels of city red tape and then neighbor red tape. But the city red tape was so daunting that if it wasn't for the fact that they were sitting on a very good building with probably a good cushion of money to survive themselves, the places that were going to open on second floor couldn't survive long enough to figure it out, and they didn't want to. And it soured their dreams of opening any sort of cafe. So they came and shook my hand and says, congrats for being stalwart enough to deal with it. And so the city's challenges are they make it a little difficult for you. Even they told me the less you say, the better it is, which I was a fool and didn't do because I tell people everything. I just can't, right. I can't hide stuff. It's just like, oh, there's a crack here. And they're like, oh my God, that's like $10,000 to fix it. You got to replace your entire ceiling. I'm like, I hate all of you. And then on the other side of the coin, from a business to business perspective, there's a double-edged sword. The good side of the business to business is that you've got the Guelph Chamber and a lot of amazing businesses that are supportive. We're opening up a cafe 2 seconds away from Balzac's. Yeah. And they gave us letters of support, recommendation. They helped us out. They were so helpful in every way possible. Silence is a venue. They don't conflict with us, but they supported us. Mm-hmm. We had support from so many other businesses in the downtown core that were very, like, the Red Brick. I cannot tell you how pivotal the Red Brick was to helping us figure out how to just like balance books and do whatever we needed to in the cafe world. Shelley from the Red Brick and Arthur, if you're listening to this, you guys are absolutely mentors of mine. I love you both. And I wish you another 10 years of success in your business and more. And, you know, but then there's the double-edged sword. Mm. You know, I watched this 10 years ago when Red Brick opened between Red Brick and Planet Bean. Mm. It was a brawl. It was a brawl. It was an insane brawl. And there's this dichotomy now between other places and mine that are of this like-minded, where I really just would be willing to do whatever I need to support. In fact, I even tried to say, let's find a way to market together. And it doesn't work out. And there's a lot of negativity coming from the other sides. And so I've witnessed and felt the pain of, I don't say slander, but it's like, you know, I've seen businesses eat each other up. You know, right. I've seen them fight. And they don't get along with each other. And they do really sneaky things like call bylaw and try to get you nailed for something that you didn't do. And you're like, and when bylaw comes, they look at you and go, everything's fine. See you next week. It's like it turns into like Norman Cliff coming into Cheers where it's just like, you know, seriously, at one point, the people were calling bylaw so much on us, they'd walk in and go, what new games you got? And we're like, we got this. They're like, oh, okay, bye. And they'd walk away. Like because you play by the rules, you're fine. But knowing that you play by the rules and knowing that someone's trying to get you out because they can't do it in a business sense, like a monopoly sense, it's just, it sucks. Mm. And that's a petty side of Guelph that I don't like. Mm. And anybody who walks in to my cafe and says, I'd like to sit down and have a beer, even if I don't like you, let me put it to you this way. The Round Table's not me. I am, and GenreCon is not me. Afterlife is not me. These communities have grown far beyond any inception that I had on what this place could be. Mm. It is so big that the first person to not be welcome there would be me. No, I'm telling you the truth. Like, it is an all-inclusive safe zone for everybody in this city. I don't care if you're a minority, if you're gay, straight, whatever. It is a safe zone. Nobody's excluded from that place. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's important. And that is should be important even for business-to-business ownership, that you guys are welcome in my place. Mm. And I'd like to work together. So if anybody wants to reach a handout, you can contact me or Facebook, influencer@lynnvander.com, and I will talk about any marketing method possible. So that's the double side of business in Guelph. Mm. But I mean, you know, other places I've heard are a lot worse. So I think we're in a really good community regardless. Mm. And the patrons are phenomenal. Everybody in the city is just, they'll come out and support you no matter what. And that's huge. Mm-hmm. So,
well, we'll let you get back to it.
We did it, eh?
Wow. We made it.
I can't even realize that was a half hour or more.
Oh, oh yeah. Time flies.
Well, Adam, I can't thank you enough for having me on here. And it was a blast to hang out and talk with you again.
Yes, it was. Tom, thank you so much for your time. And good luck with all your future endeavors as they multiply further.
Yeah, I fly out to Vancouver and Seattle on Tuesday. So.
Oh, well, you're flying to the other coast.
Yeah.
The week of your convention.
No, I'm back the following week. I'm back in time for the convention. Don't worry.
All right. Good. Glad we sorted that out.
See ya.
Thanks, Tom. And once again, that was Tom Gofton. And you can learn more about GenreCon and buy tickets at the website, GenreCon.com. And you can find the con on social media on Facebook at Facebook.com/GenreCon and on Twitter and Instagram at GenreCon Guelph. Once again, GenreCon takes place February 9th to 11th at the Holiday Inn at 601 Scottsdale Drive here in Guelph. And if that's not nerdy enough for you, you can visit the Roundtable Game Tavern online at roundtabletavern.com or in person at 32 Essex Street. You can also check out Afterlife Video Game Lounge at afterlifevideogamelounge.com or in the IRL at 101 Windham Street North. As for the Guelph Politicast, that is all for this week. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics in Sidale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes, and while you're there, you can also listen to Open Sources Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. You can go to the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph, and you can donate to Guelph Politico on Patreon at patreon.com/guelphpolitico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, then please consider donating. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where we will have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.